This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Anderson, goes in. Oh, what a save! Cross ice, Connor scores! Line A finds Kyle Connor, who finds the back of the net, but Line A across the line, shoots, scores! Patrick Line A with a bit of a bobble, ends up back on his stick, and Line A finds the corner, and the Winnipeg Jets beat the Calgary Flames in overtime.
Boy, it's nice to hear from our buddy Dennis Bayak, isn't it? That from, of course, Thursday night's victory by the Winnipeg Jets, a 4-3 overtime win over the dastardly Calgary Flames, the division rivals. That feels good to say as well, I must say. Division rival Calgary Flames, almost like how it should be. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. To no one's surprise, we're all about the Winnipeg Jets. One game down. A minimum of 55 to go. At least I hope a minimum of 55 to go. Who knows with COVID? But let's go with, let's be optimistic and say at least 55 to go, never mind any potential playoff games that might come to fruition after that. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Going to start with a little bit of breaking news. It's not a big piece of breaking news, but a little breaking news on this Saturday morning. Winnipeg Jets were scheduled to practice this morning at 11 o'clock. That practice has been canceled. From the Winnipeg Jets media advisory, the Winnipeg Jets have canceled their practice scheduled for today. The decision was made out of an abundance of caution due to potential exposure to COVID-19. There is no further information at this time. There will be no media availability today, and information regarding tomorrow's schedule will come at a later time. So I believe this is probably a good example of the new normal that the NHL is going to be experiencing this year. We know the Dallas Stars aren't going to start their season until next Friday because of COVID. The Winnipeg Jets running into a little bit of something this morning. No word yet if it's a positive test, if it's serious, how widespread it is. All that information will come out later on in the day, theoretically.
And we're going to have to just get used to that, right, boys?
Yep.
Like, this doesn't mean that a player or staff member on the Jets has COVID-19. It just means that they're taking the proper steps based on the NHL protocols, right? Similar to Nikolaj Ehlers, right?
Yep.
Nikolaj Ehlers, we all know he played game one against Calgary. He didn't have COVID. He obviously, you know, had some symptoms, so they kept him out of the game, out of practice, and then he was good to go for the game. But this is going to happen, as you mentioned, Drew, you know, this is going to happen across the NHL. This is the new normal. Until, you know, everyone's vaccinated and until we get past this, certainly, you know, for the rest of, you know, this 2021 season, you know, we're going to see this a lot throughout the league.
Exactly right. And we don't want to spend the entire morning talking about COVID because there was a hockey game that was played on Thursday night.
Yep.
And the first period was not what I would describe as a banner first period for the Winnipeg Jets. They looked slow. They looked a little... They just didn't have the jump you thought that they would necessarily have to start a bizarre season.
Yeah.
But the second and third period, a complete and total role reversal, especially that second period, the Winnipeg Jets absolutely taking it to the Calgary Flames. They, you know, they eventually tie up the game after being down 3-1, and it was really the Patrick Laine show. You got to see him, demonstrate really all aspects of his game. And I mean, I tweeted it, and I know I'm not the only one who thought it, but after that performance on Thursday night, you got to say, okay, back up the Brinks truck, let him write the blank check, fill in whatever dollar amount he wants. People want to see Patrick Laine here in Winnipeg long term, especially after that kind of performance.
Well, and we were saying that back in October, right? Mm-hmm. When Laine first appeared on Frank's trade bait board, right? Like, we were saying that this is a generational scorer, not generational talent, because I realize a lot of people don't like that when you compare him to McDavid or Matthews or Crosby. I don't think he's that far off, especially after that goal that he scored in overtime or the first goal even that he scored in the first period. But, like, come on, guys. Like, we know his ability. We know that he has room to grow in his overall game, but we know that, you know, his shot and the type of goals that he can score, there are only maybe, what, three or four players that could score a goal like that? Like, just specifically, you know, focusing in on that overtime goal. You mentioned, you know, individual effort. Like, that was all Lionel. Like, no offense to anybody else on the ice, but he starts that play, guys, at his own face-off circle.
Yeah.
Like, in his own end. And, you know, the players that he goes through, I mean, he didn't necessarily go through them, but Sean Monahan lifts his stick, so his original shot, you know, gets thwarted by Monahan, but it's Mark Giordano that is on defense there on the right side. So it's not like he's going up against, you know, some type of, you know, third line player. These are the best players on the Flames. So that goal was just absolutely incredible. Well, the shot in the first period wasn't too bad either.
It starts by looking in Jets' own zone in that 3-on-3. It starts with him sort of looking off Johnny Gaudreau with the almost fake pass. You know, everyone thought he was going to sort of cycle it back and, you know, reset the play. Instead, he baits Gaudreau, and then he's off. And you know, yes, Monahan comes back and makes that nice, you know, stick check and back check initially, but Laine sticks with the play, Dave, and I mean he wires it past Markstrom. I mean, that's what more would you want from a player than make a smart defensive play in your own zone, take the puck up the ice on an individual effort, and score a winner. It's textbook.
Yeah, Dave, get in here in a second, but you know, just on that topic, that's why Laine has been compared to Ovechkin really since he was 18 years old entering the league, right? Like, how many guys have that? To me, that's all skill and strength, right? To have your stick lifted and then to have, and also the smarts, right? Mm-hmm. To still get that shot off, to fight Giordano off, and to get that goal. Like, that is just the type of play that only a few players, not only on the Jets can make, but only a few players in the league can make. So that really is a perfect illustration of just how much skill he has and how unique of a player he has, right? So, just incredible. And overall, you know, again, you know, Dave, I want you to get in here, but that first period I didn't think was as bad as some people thought. Like, you know, the Perreault penalty was bad, and they, you know, the power play goal, maybe that's a goal that you obviously don't want to give up, but, you know, I thought the Jets actually were not bad in that first period. So again, you know, great victory. It's only one game. We don't want to get too excited here, boys, but obviously, you know, Laine definitely quickly changed the narrative with his performance on Thursday night.
Yeah, Dave. So, you know, this is the first time that we've really ever seen, you know, the line of Connor, Stastny, and Laine. You know, that wasn't the line that we saw, you know, 2 years ago or three years ago when Stastny was here. You're used to Connor being up there. You really haven't even seen Connor and Laine together all that often.
Yep.
And 6 points between the two of them, between Connor and Laine, two goals and an assist for Laine, a goal and two assists for Connor.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't ask for a much better debut from the Jets, you know, let's call them the 1B line as opposed to the 1A line.
Yeah, and you know, Tazzy's point that he just made, Paul Stastny was talking about Laine's strength that a lot of people don't necessarily take into account about just how strong he is. And you can see it. You can see, again, he's 22 years old. This is a guy who's just growing into his body, and he's getting stronger and stronger, and you see it. You see it in the results. I mean, that was a guy, you know, and I was joking with people on Twitter after about the whole, you know, we have an angry Finn on our hands and, you know, the Dustin Byfuglien passing of the torch. But like,
let me just explain that for people who might understand where Byfuglien took on sort of two Flames in a scrum a couple of years ago. It was Laine now taking on the couple of the Flames after the Hanifin hit on Connor.
Yeah. And you know what? The reality is that goes a long way with his teammates. I mean, there's no question about it. You can say whatever you want, but the reality is when a guy comes to sees Kyle Connor get put face first into the boards like that, and he's lying on his, you know, on his knees on the ice, you know, and then Patrick Laine comes to his defense, and again, like, he's a big boy, but he's not a fighter by any stretch of the imagination. He was a little disappointed he didn't get the Gordie Howe hat trick, only got a 2-minute penalty, but you can just really, that really to me kind of got the juices flowing, you know, because again, it's just a different atmosphere. It's weird, you know. I mean, I was a little disappointed in the crowd. Thought maybe they could have helped with the Jets with the penalty kill, but
You don't usually hear it that quiet in there.
No, and so, you know, you're sitting there in that first period, and it was just weird. I mean, the game to me changed in the second period, but it started to get more normal. That first period just felt odd without anybody in the building, really, with the exception of like 15 of us media and, like, you know, the Jets people and the NHL people. Realistically, it wasn't like obviously a lot of people. So you're, and the photographers. So you're, it's just such a different atmosphere. And I'm sure the players, you know, and look, they haven't played hockey since August.
Yeah. So, and they haven't played hockey in Winnipeg since
March.
Yeah.
So over 10 months since they played a game in Bell MTS Place. And I just look at it and I think to myself, okay, well, you know, that first period, again, wasn't great. And what a play by Derek Forward.
Sure.
You know, to really, I mean, if you think about it, it's a 3-1 game.
No, it wasn't a 3-1 game at that point in time. It was a 1-0 game.
Oh, 1-0 game. Sorry. And yeah. He made the play
and that's
when Laine got sprung.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, it's just interesting how you can, those little changes. Sure. And then in the second period, the play that Paul Maurice really says kind of effectively changed the game for the Jets was the shift by the Lowry Kopp line against, was it the Goodrow line? I can't remember which line it was against. But the reality was they went out and they effectively gave an opportunity for the Scheifele line. And then again, we see the Scheifele line came out and had effective and scores the goal. And I think that's, you know, you could really sense the tide turning in that second period. And the Jets, you know, and it was ironic, right? Because Paul Maurice talked about, like, the players talked about how Maurice came in and gave a speech in the first intermission. And Maurice said, well, really, it was my opening speech that I thought was going to be the more effective one, not that one. But, you know, the reality is the players turned it around and it was, you know, look, Connor Hellebuyck, you know, to Ezzie's point, probably wants the power play goal back, but the truth is, again, just like everybody else, it's going to take a little bit of time to get, you know, back to, quote, normal or the new normal. And I think, just like everybody else, he started to pick it up and get better throughout the game.
You know, after the first period, Hellebuyck doesn't give up another goal.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's a 3-1 game after 20 minutes for Calgary. And, you know, at that point in time, this is where you need your goalie, especially your Vezina Trophy winning goalie, to say no more. Because if he gives up a fourth goal there, then it's even, you know, a bigger hole for the Jets to climb out of. And even if he gives up a fourth goal after the Jets make it 3-2, well, it's still a little bit of a kick in the ribs at that point in time. Yeah. That's where the Jets, I mean, you know, the Flames had 13 shots in the first period. The rest of the game, the Flames had 13 shots.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's emblematic of how the Jets game improved after that opening 20 minutes.
Right, and that's not just goaltending or just not, you know, forwards. The defense, I think, especially looked a lot more comfortable as that game progressed, right? Like, you know, we talked about that power play goal. They just looked, you know, the penalty kill just, it didn't look very crisp, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was Pionk and Beaulieu that were out there, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back and look, but, you know, I thought Morrissey and Pullman definitely as the game progressed. And that's a pairing, guys, that we obviously saw, you know, at the beginning of last year.
Right.
And that's something that we didn't necessarily think, you know, wasn't going to be a successful pairing. It's just when you don't have Dylan DeMello, that's obviously not an option. But if DeMello is in the lineup, just based on, you know, advanced stats and a small sample size alone, mm-hmm. Morrissey and DeMello just, they had instant chemistry after DeMello was acquired back in February after the trade deadline. So Morrissey and Pullman, to me, I mean, that's a promising sign. But again, it's one game. You don't want to get too excited.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd rather get the 2 points at the end of the day. That's really what it's going to be about. We're going to talk about that a lot this year, right?
Yeah.
Like Drew mentioned off the top of the show, there's only 55 games left, which is weird to say when the season just started. But, you know, that's really going to be the story of this season. You're going to be happy if it's ugly, if you end up beating Ottawa and Toronto, but, you know, one of those games you're badly outshot, let's say most likely by the Leafs, even though the Sens looked pretty good last night. If you get the 2 points, you're going to say, okay, let's pack up and go back home. We're going to be happy with getting that win. So I think that's the most important thing. With such a small opportunity or a window, I should say.
Yeah, you know, the margin of error is that big.
So that's why, you know, look at Pittsburgh. They've lost 2 games to Philly already, and, you know, they're already behind the 8-ball. So overall, if you have one bad period, who cares? I mean, you had 2 really good periods, and they were the better team in the overtime.
Well, and what's interesting to me is the fact that we now understand why Morrissey was paired with Pullman. Because DeMello obviously was expecting a child, and he and his wife had a kid. So clearly they knew that it was around this time. So Paul Maurice obviously wanted to get Pullman comfortable with Morrissey again, just so to ensure, because if DeMello wasn't able to go, he knows he's already got a comfort with those two, but if he wasn't able to go like he wasn't because they ended up having their child, he would at least be able to have that Morrissey Pullman playing a little more effectively. So now we understand, because a lot of people were questioning, why would DeMello not be playing with Morrissey? Why would he be on the third pairing? Well, now we understand it, because obviously they were expecting their first child.
They're just complimentary, Dave. Like, you know, even though the advanced stats weren't the best early last year, especially between Morrissey and Pullman, and I think that had a lot to do with the changeover on defense and the fact that Pullman had never played that type of role, mm-hmm. right? Playing the other team's top competition on many nights, but that familiarity is a huge part of it. And, mm-hmm. and like I said, I think they're just complementary. I think, you know, we know why Morrissey and Pionk don't, like, you know, whether it's, you know, an offensive-minded defenseman or a defensive-minded defenseman, I think they just really work well together. But having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if we see DeMello and Morrissey, you know, either against Toronto or Ottawa.
That's the privilege or the beauty of at least having options now, which the Jets have on their back end that you can say last year their options were, you know, maybe worse or poor or worse than worse in a lot of times. They now have a little bit more depth back there. You know, Derek Forbort came in and played a very solid game. I mean, he made the double pack save there, the double pad stack save there in the first period, but he was solid. He wasn't flashy. You don't expect flash from Derek Forbort, but he didn't do anything. The whole team, you know, after that first period, that was about as good of a sort of shutdown hockey as you're going to want to see from the Jets. They controlled the play. We mentioned only 13 shots for the Flames in the remainder of the final 40-plus minutes of the game, including overtime. And that's how, you know, that's how they want. The back pressure, the skating, the five-man unit defending well. The Jets got all that in the last 40 minutes of the game on Thursday night.
Got to say, didn't love Sammy Niku's game.
I mean, Sammy Niku's game was rough.
Yeah, you guys know, I mean, I know Dave, you know, has watched him much more than I have at the AHL level when he was defenseman of the year.
Yeah.
But
there was that giveaway in that shift in the third period in particular that
he knows he has to be better.
His you know, he was very effective on the first Jets goal, made a beautiful pass to Ehlers who carried it in, got the shot that went off the crossbar and then eventually was buried by Laine. But the point is that so that was a beautiful pass by Niku. And I thought he actually had a good first period, and then there were a couple of gaffes in the third that were kind of head scratchers, and there was one play where it was just kind of like he was toast, like you could see he just needed to get the puck out, and then he was ineffective in terms of getting rid of the puck, which is unusual for him because usually he's fairly good at making a pass. So it wasn't his best game, but the reality is, you know, again, like a lot of these guys, that was Sammy Niku's first game in what, almost a year.
Yeah, pretty close.
So, I mean, again, we're going to see some rust on some of these players.
Well, and we'll talk more about how we see the lineup changing, if at all, ahead of Monday's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But when we come back, the waiver wire, the transaction wire for the Jets was busy this week. We'll talk about the addition of Anton Forsberg, Matthew Perreault clearing, the signing of Trevor Lewis. Much more to come, looking at the Jets' bottom six forwards as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He's a very driven young man. He wants to be great, and sometimes you have to learn how that unfolds. So what he got tonight, he had earned. He didn't get lucky, didn't have a bunch of good bounces go for him or anything like that. He just worked and worked. For him to get down the ice in overtime the way he did, that's a fit guy. You know, that's a guy who's been pushing himself for 2 weeks after a good summer of training.
That's Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice after Thursday's victory over the Calgary Flames talking about the impressive performance by one Patrick Laine. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Want to pass along our Illegal Curve question of the day. We want to hear from you on this topic. After game one, only one game in the books, but after game one, what did you think of the configuration of the Jets' forward lines and D pairings, and what changes would you make, if any? Now, obviously, we expect Dylan DeMello to come into the lineup on Monday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, so maybe you don't necessarily have to highlight that one. But pairings in the lineup, out of the lineup, forward groups, whatever you think changes you would like to see, let us know at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can also text us 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. So the Winnipeg Jets obviously had a very busy week, really, as it was throughout the league. On the transaction wire, they lose two guys that they were hoping to pass through to the taxi squad. Lucas Spezza, defenseman, depth defenseman, probably your number eight guy, goes to the Nashville Predators on waivers. Eric Comrie goes to the New Jersey Devils. Matthew Perreault clears waivers. Obviously, he was still in the Jets lineup on Thursday night, but he is now for the next, I think it's what, 10 games or 24 days, if I'm not mistaken?
30 days.
30 days.
10 games or 30 days.
10 games or 30 days. In the next 10, if he doesn't play in the next 10 games or the next month, the Jets can just move him down to the taxi squad without having to pass him through waivers again. They signed Trevor Lewis, who had been here on that PTO. He gets that one-year $750,000 deal. And then after losing Comrie, everyone knew the Jets were going to need another goaltender. They get that goaltender in Anton Forsberg, who is on the 23-man roster for the Jets. He's not yet on the taxi squad, because if the Jets were to pass him through waivers or try and put him through waivers to the taxi squad, he would undoubtedly be claimed, probably, by the Edmonton Oilers, the team that tried to put him through in the first place. This whole taxi squad goaltender musical chairs is going to be an interesting one to watch all season long.
Yeah, and, you know, Drew, I got to give Dave, you know, credit for this, because, you know, he was talking about this last week and on Twitter all week, right? Like, as soon as Comrie was claimed, the Moose technically did not have a goalie, mm-hmm. right? No, they didn't have a goalie.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously, Mikael Burden, the plan was never for him to either be on the 23-man roster or the taxi squad. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, we all remember, you know, the year that Comrie had last year where he went to Vancouver and then he went to Detroit.
Arizona.
And then, yeah, see, I forgot. Arizona and then Detroit, and then the Jets got him back and he finished the season with the Moose, right? So
right.
That was a tough year for him. And then, you know, the Devils, as soon as, you know, last week we were off air, you know, Corey Crawford officially announced his retirement. You knew that the only other goaltender aside from Mackenzie Blackwood was Scott Wedgwood. So you knew that the Devils were going to acquire, like, a veteran goalie. And at this point in his career, Comrie is a veteran goalie, right? So, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, Dave knows, you know, from following the American Hockey League, Anton Forsberg's a pretty good goalie. Mm-hmm. And when he was a member of, he was drafted by Columbus, and when he was a member of the Blue Jackets organization, you know, he had a 20, I forget how many, 20-plus win season with the Cleveland Monsters. That was, I think, 4 years ago. So, I mean, he's a pretty good goalie. At the NHL level, he hasn't had outstanding numbers. But this is a guy that, you know, this is the type of goalie, like, I was speculating on Twitter that maybe they would get a guy like Mike Condon. Like, there aren't too many guys left. Like, Garrett Sparks signed a PTO, I forget with which team. But it's a goaltender like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Andrew Hammonds of the world.
Yeah.
Like, these are the type of goalies that you want in this position. So, you know, God forbid anything happens to either Hellebuck or Lauren Brossoit, you have a guy like Anton Forsberg. He's a legitimate NHL goalie. Like, he is a guy that can play that backup role. You obviously don't want Forsberg playing, you know, any significant amount of games. I mean, if Forsberg's playing 15 or 20 games, you know, that's
things have gone off the rails.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a nice, you know, acquisition by Chevy. And essentially, he was forced to make that move.
Okay, let's talk about the Jets forward group. So, as you and I were texting during the game on Thursday night, and admittedly, this was in the first period, which wasn't the prettiest period for the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, you watch this team. I mean, they have so much firepower from the top six. There's no question that top six is stacked when it comes to offensive talent.
Mm-hmm.
The way the Jets bottom six was aligned, and the way the players were deployed on Thursday night, I just don't see any offense right now coming from that bottom six.
Oh,
I mean, you know, Adam Lowry, we know at this point in time, has offensive limitations. He's just not doesn't have that playmaker's touch. He doesn't have that goal scorer's touch. Matthew Perreault at this point in his career is hanging on. He's got, you know, maybe in brief sparks you see some offensive firepower and some offensive flourish, but it's not there on a consistent basis. This, to me, is the big question mark for the Winnipeg Jets among their forward groups right now, is where are they going to find the offense in the bottom six, assuming that they need some amount of offense from that bottom six?
Well, I mean, again, it's a function of finding players who can be effective in that role. I think, you know, to me, a guy like Jansen Harkins would be a smart addition to Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp line. I think those guys, I mean, look, they had their chances. There were opportunities for, you know, they were a couple of passes in front. Kopp and Lowry did have, I mean, because they have such good familiarity with each other. But I think if you put a player of Harkins' work ethic and intelligence on that line, it would help them become a more effective line. I'm not going to say they're going to suddenly each score 15, 30, you know, goals, but I think the reality is, I think that would make that in a more effective line. I think Appleton adds a big body element. I don't know that his offensive upside at the NHL is significant enough to have the impact that you need. Again, we've long advocated, you need more than just two scoring lines. Don't get me wrong, the Jets top six looks really good. Like that, they, you know, those guys are going to be able to score. That's not a problem. But the issue is, You can't have just two lines that score. You need an effective third line. Now, obviously you need them for more than just, you need them to shut down, but you also need some offense. And to me, again,
you need them to be possession positive, which they are for the most part, with some goal scoring included.
So again, you want guys who can do that. And a guy like Christian Vesalainen is another guy who he's had a really effective training camp. Mm-hmm. He's had a very positive attitude. And the reality is, like, he's a guy that you could put on maybe that third line right wing, and he's going to give you something. Like, you're going to give up a little bit of defense, but you're going to provide that line with a little bit more jump and a little more offense. So I would like a guy like Harkins, a guy like Vesalainen, and then you throw Appleton down on your fourth line with potentially Lewis and Perreault, and you still have an effective fourth line. But I just think, like, you need that third line not just to have defensive responsibility and defensive jump, but also offensive prowess.
And there's no doubt that there's a big question mark when it comes to the bottom six, because Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis are new to the team. And so whichever winger you put on that line, whether it's, Perreault and you have the dirty 30s line, or as you mentioned, Dave, if you drop Mason Appleton down to that line, we haven't seen enough. It's been one game.
Right.
But to me, like, the biggest cliches in hockey are consistency and identity. And I think that's what you want to see, especially out of a fourth line where you maybe don't expect as much goals. You want to see an identity and consistency, not just in terms of from game to game or practice to practice, but I think you want to see a line that spends a decent sample size together, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree, Dave. If you're talking about, Jansen Harkins or Christian Vesalainen versus Mason Appleton, both of those players have a higher offensive upside than Mason Appleton. But I would like to see that line, let's say that it's going to be Kopp, Lowry, and Harkins, for example. Mm-hmm. You want to see that line not just for a game or two. You want to see that line for, let's say, a couple of weeks or a month. So that is something that I think, we should be keeping our eyes on in terms of how Paul Maurice and the coaching staff is going to put together those bottom lines, because, we haven't seen since the TLC line, mm-hmm. we haven't really seen, a third line have the type of impact. And, Brandon Tanev scored a nice goal for Pittsburgh the other night, even though they...
He's got two now already.
Even though they overpaid him. sorry, Brandon, but...
He knows.
It's something that I think is crucial to having an elite team. And that's what the Jets want to be. They don't want to just be in the playoffs. They didn't acquire Paul Stastny just to get into the playoffs. They want to get back to that 2018 level. And I agree 100% with Dave. Jansen Harkins is unfortunately out of the lineup right now. We're not sure if he's going to play on Monday or Tuesday or on this road trip at all. But I think that there's no doubt that his play last year during the regular season and the playoffs, I think, has warranted a long look on the third line.
You need to do it, because right now, while that, the third and fourth lines weren't a problem on Thursday night, there are going to be instances where the first line and the second line might not score for you, and you're going to need some offensive contributions from your bottom six. And as constructed on Thursday night, I'm not sure you're ever going to get that. So that would be an area that I would look for some changes. Now, whether or not, Jets head coach Paul Maurice would agree with me, I suspect he probably wouldn't. We know his reliance on veterans. We know that, both Thompson and Lewis were members on the penalty kill, so they did play a penalty killing role, which helped get that fourth line up towards close to 10 minutes of ice time for both Perreault and Thompson and Lewis. Thompson and Lewis on the PK, Perreault getting some power play time in addition to his PP time.
Worth noting, Mark Scheifele played, 26 minutes in the game?
It was a high number. Certainly, it was somewhere right around there. I know that.
I think he ended up with
26-21.
Yeah. And what do you have, about six shots on that?
Six shots on that,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, he had a good game.
Yeah, look, the top six for the Jets, there was nothing wrong with that. They performed and they showed up.
Nikolaj Ehlers was fantastic.
Well, Mr. Zone Entry himself. I mean, I don't know how many times we have to be surprised at it. And I want to talk about Ehlers, maybe I still need him on that first power play, for that first power play.
Well, there were five forwards.
I know, on the 5-on-3, and that was great. That was terrific. That was a good use of that by Paul Maurice. But, when there were still times where it looked like the Jets were struggling to get the zone. zone entry on the power play?
You need Ehlers on the first power
play. It just doesn't make sense to me that he's not. And that's something we'll obviously talk about through the course of the season. When we come back, the Jets, of course, on Monday night are into Toronto to face the Leafs. David Alter covers the Leafs for the Hockey News. He'll join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's where we're asking our Illegal Curve question of the day. That is, of the Jets forward groups and the D pairings, would you like to, what changes, if any, would you like to see ahead of Monday night's contest in Toronto against the Leafs? Want to hear from you on that? At Illegal Curve, send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Hockey News, he covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend David Alter. David, good morning. Nice to hear from you. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, guys. It's great to be back. It's great to have hockey to cover again, too.
That it is. And last night it was not a great performance by the Leafs in the nation's capital, dropping a 5-3 decision to the Ottawa Senators. You know, the Leafs, you know, the game on Thursday, on Wednesday night against the Habs was certainly entertaining. And then last night, you know, it seems like the inconsistency, I know it's early in the season, but it seems like the inconsistency of the Maple Leafs that we've seen in years past maybe reared its ugly head last night in their performance against the Senators.
Yeah, it's, well, especially in the last couple of years. I mean, you know, every year it seems when you talk to Leaf fans and everyone always wonders, is this going to be the time they kind of get over what is plaguing them? Are they going to address some sort of issue? Or is this the year the young nucleus matures and breaks out and plays two-way hockey and they look like world beaters that they've been placed by pundits to be year after year? But, you know, a lot of the issues that came up in last night's loss to the Senators were talking points in the offseason. I mean, you had your offense that was kind of anemic. They were pressuring. They were creating a lot of chances, but they couldn't get the tape-to-tape passes in a lot of situations. And then, you know, the defense, they added a couple guys like TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian that was supposed to stabilize things. And both of them at different points have kind of not looked great. And goaltending, which has been a question for a few years, if Anderson has what it takes to kind of solidify himself as the future and not just the present of the Leafs in goal, you know, there were a couple things that made you feel like, okay, well, he's still kind of battling out there. So all those things combined just became issues again, and that's why some people are concerned about it. But I think it's important to stress that it's two games and everyone is not going to look sharp no matter how well you prepare without preseason games and a short camp and especially a long layoff.
Dave, you just mentioned it's only been two games. You know, the Leafs are 1-1. You pointed this out in your article for the Hockey News, and you know, I caught part of the game, but, you know, TJ Brody, you know, was the worst possession player on 5-on-5 on the Leafs, which is incredible. We were doing our season preview show last week, and, you know, one of the reasons why I think the Leafs are the best team in the division, in addition to, you know, all the firepower they have up front, is because the acquisition of TJ Brody, you know, and Zach Bogosian, I think just makes that Leafs defense one of the best in the division. So, you know, last night's performance by TJ Brody and Morgan Riley, do you just chalk that up to, you know, a bad night, or what are you kind of seeing out of that pair? Because obviously, you know, that's your top pair. You're expecting big things out of them this year.
I think the pair looked all right against Montreal. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it was Ottawa's forecheck, if they were bringing a different matchup against that defensive pair. Like I tend to go over, especially being at the rink, after watching a game in person, I usually watch the tape, and I'm kind of halfway through it right now after just waking up here. But it looked like Ottawa was bringing something different on the forecheck that perhaps got them out of sorts. But It all really stemmed from the second half of the game. It just looked like a different team out there, and Brody was supposed to be that solution. And for a lot of people that don't follow the Leafs on a regular basis, that Brody is an analytics darling in joining a team that embraces that element of the game. And he has been much talked about for years because, if you'll recall, the Leafs and Flames had a deal on the table that included Brody coming to Toronto the year before, but that was scuttled because Nazem Kadri invoked had Calgary on his no trade list, and that prevented the Leafs, I guess, a year removed from getting the defenseman that they thought, as you mentioned, was going to kind of complete their issues in that regard. So it's interesting that he kind of looked out of sorts, and Sheldon Keefe, you also saw, wasn't ready to kind of, you know, put him in a place where he was necessarily to blame. And I do think, despite the numbers, that he was kind of symptomatic for what happened to the Leafs as a whole last night, which was they just left their foot off the gas at the midway point of the game when they had Ottawa on their heels for much of it. And then it stopped. And that's really been the issue that's plagued the Leafs in terms of, can they play full out for a full 60 minutes? It's always been the question, and the question was asked again last night.
You know, David, it's only been a couple of games, but how would you assess the addition of Joe Thornton to the lineup?
You know, I can see what the Leafs were talking about in the training camp when you can't watch. I remember Sheldon Keefe saying, I wish you guys could see the positive effect that he's had on the group. And I can kind of see that, because after the Leafs won the game against Montreal, it was just kind of funny with these Zoom calls. You're just kind of trying to infer and from body language and how players present themselves and how they feel. And one of the things you saw with Thornton was halfway through the first question, he just kind of like, wasn't that great? Like, I don't ever recall a Toronto Maple Leaf interjecting on a question like that just for a sense of levity. And I think if that's a little bit of what Thornton does there, I'm sure that's what he's doing in the room as well, to kind of change the mood in the room. And I thought he was pretty good. I liked how they limited his minutes in the first game, where when it got close and the game was getting a little bit faster, they subbed him off that line and put Zach Hyman in there, and move Simmons up to the third line, just to kind of limit Joe's minutes, because playing top line as a winger he's gonna run out of gas at some point. And I like that where they were using him in spots, not gassing him out. I thought maybe he played a little bit too much last night. The minutes only showed an increase of about a minute and change, but it looked like he was on for much later in the game than he was in the previous one. And I think he hasn't looked out of place, but it's the jury's still out. Like, I know he brings a lot of those other things. He's looked like he's been in the right spot, but like everybody else last night, he was just one of those guys where he couldn't get the team pushed to that next level when they were kind of falling back in the second half of the game.
David Alter is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. David covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the Hockey News. The Jets into Toronto on Monday to face the Leafs for the first time this season. You know, David, along those lines, you know, Joe Thornton, certainly no spring chicken. Wayne Simmons, I didn't see that he had a lot left in the tank, you know, last year, and yet the Leafs bring him in. Jason Spezza, well, he's certainly not young either. Given that this season is a sprint, and given the compact timeline to this entire season, are the Leafs potentially asking for a little bit of trouble, having to rely on those three veteran players who are certainly at the tail end of their career to be able to play, you know, a decent minutes on a night-in, night-out basis?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily an issue right now, just because, yeah, they are bringing a lot of veteran players, but I think for Toronto's situation, and it gets talked about a lot, but it's important to note, the reason why the Leafs roster is constructed in the way it is because they're getting value out of these veterans, where they would normally, at any point in their career, not only yield minimums, minimum salary, or in Simmons' case, 1.5. But also, they're just their top four skilled players take up half the cap space. That's really what it comes down to. It was never planned that way pre-pandemic. There was always a thought that the cap would go up and they'd be able to utilize that money to kind of add more depth into that spot. But with the prospect pool loaded as it is and guys not ready, they had to fill these other spots with these types of contracts. And they do need the veteran presence, and they have it. They most certainly do, with Spezza, Simmons, and Thornton. I don't think it's an issue, because if it does become an issue, well, they can swap those spots out easily, because there are minimum salary guys that they can kind of put into that spot if they really do feel they need a change. But I think when you look at the minutes of those three guys, where they're playing in the lineup, and the way Sheldon Keefe is going to deploy his skilled players and make sure that those guys play more, something he was brought in to do that Mike Babcock before him wouldn't do, I think it's the right strategy for the setup that the Maple Leafs are currently in right now. They just the pandemic has caused a flat cap. That's probably going to be another flat cap next year, maybe even the year after, depending on the way the financials look. And this is the most creative solution to the problem that the Leafs have when it comes to their cap space. That's really just the be-all, end-all of it.
Now, sticking with cap space, you know, I wanted to ask you about Freddie Anderson, Dave, because we all know that he's in the last year of his contract, and, you know, he's allowed 9 goals in 2 games, but I think you'd agree that, you know, many of those goals were not his fault. But, you know, I wanted to ask you about the pressure on Freddie Anderson, and I'm not sure if he's going to play tonight. I assume, you know, whether he plays or not, there's a good chance that he will start against the Jets on
Monday night.
Sorry, I forgot if it was Monday or Tuesday. But what about that pressure? Because, you know, we know that, you know, Freddie Anderson has been a really good goaltender for the Leafs for quite some time now, but, you know, they're going to have to give him, you know, a substantial contract, and that might be a problem fitting that under the cap, as you mentioned, which is going to be relatively flat.
Yeah, so I mean, this was a question that I thought about at length when I took this job, and even just following the Leafs before. It's a very unique spot. You look at everything that happened in the offseason in October, and the highest cap hit that was given to a goaltender, given the new economic reality, was the goaltender the Leafs played last night, Matt Murray, on an average annual basis of, I think it was 6.25 or 6.5 per year. And I can't see an appetite around the league for teams wanting to dole out a lot of money or give Brzgalov-type cap hit numbers to a goalie for the foreseeable future. So it's really interesting, because if you look at the three scenarios, say Anderson has a world-beating season and he gets to the Leafs to the second or third round. Like, he gets the Leafs over that playoff hump where you can say it was a successful season and there might be some interest around the league for his services. But look at the cap picture around the league. How much more of an increase is he really going to get? I just don't see the space for it, really. I think even if he has an improvement of a year, it's going to be a tough ask to get a cap hit bigger than 5.5 or 6. It's just the reality of the spending habits of a goaltender and the space that teams have. It's the worst time to be an impending free agent for a goaltender, and in some ways that is a lot of pressure for Anderson. It's been mentioned that the opening month of all of his seasons, he's always kind of looked like he was battling a bit, and without a proper training camp, it certainly looked that way last night. But then he tends to level off and provide that stable force in goal for Toronto. But any sort of the same season or worse, I have to think that unless Anderson wants to take a pay cut, which I wouldn't see him wanting to do either, I just don't see space if the Leafs feel that they didn't get to that next level and they need to go with the platoon of a goaltender that's so much cheaper. And if they have Campbell in that spot where they can kind of make it work, where else are they going to improve their roster? It's just that the finances really dictate everything right now. And it's a tricky spot for someone like Anderson. I looked at a good scenario, an okay scenario, and a bad scenario, and I couldn't find an ideal for both sides.
The Maple Leafs are going to look for revenge on the Senators tonight in the second half of the back-to-back, and then Monday the Jets will make their first visit to Toronto on the season to face the dastardly Leafs. David Alter will cover the game for the Hockey News. David, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks again for having me on.
Take care, David. Thanks again. When we come back, we look ahead to the next week for the Jets. Monday in Toronto, Tuesday and Thursday in Canada against the Senators. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Matheson walks on the corner, feeds across, and scores! Thomas Chabot fires it by Anderson. A two-man advantage goal ties the game at one. Sykes shoots, score! Tipped by Kachuk, and Ottawa's tied it. Slides it across, Coleman drops it back, score! Austin Watson snaps it home, and Ottawa has grabbed the lead.
Gord Miller with the call from our friends at, I think that would be TSN 5, if I'm not mistaken.
The Ocho.
Yeah, the Ocho covering last, that would be TSN 8, Dale.
Gear Sports Quarterly.
Covering last night's Leafs-Senators game. They're going to do a rematch tomorrow night. The Jets into Ontario for next week's games. Monday in Toronto, as we mentioned. Wednesday and Thursday in Ottawa. You know, the Senators, they looked good last night. You know, this is a Senators
team. Did they
team.
Look good, or did the Leafs look bad?
The Leafs look bad. There's no question that the Leafs look bad. But, you know, this Ottawa Senators team is going to, I think, play hard.
Yes.
They're not going to be an easy out. Like, you know, there were some games last year where they just didn't have anything. You could just see that they were almost a no-show.
Yeah.
But they have more talent this year. They're not going to be a playoff team, but they're not. If you underestimate them,
yes,
they could bite you.
Yeah,
no, they've got lots of good young talent.
There's no
even
doubt
their veterans are better. I mean, their veterans are they're not superstars. You know, Derek Stepan is at the towards the end of his career, but he's an NHL player and he knows how to be an NHL professional. And there were some nights last year that they didn't have that.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And one of the reasons you bring in Derek Stepan is because Brady Kachuk and Josh Norris need that older veteran, you know, to help them on the ice and in the dressing room, right? Like, Derek Stepan isn't a guy that you're anticipating is going to be in Ottawa for the next 7 years
or even
3 years, right?
He's a bridge.
It's a short,
he's just a bridge
exactly,
to the next generation
exactly.
of better player.
You know, looking at the score sheet, like looking at the box score, the Ottawa Senators this season, it's kind of like, you know, back in the day when you were playing NHL and you put together a team of players from all the other teams.
Yeah.
Like
like a dispersal draft.
Yeah, exactly. You look at Braden Coburn, Derek Stepan, okay, Austin Watson, he was on Nashville last year. You know, you look at Cedric Paquette, he obviously came over in the trade from Tampa Bay, but Artem Anisimov, he's been there for a little bit, but Dadonov came over from Florida. Like, you look at the team and it's like half of the team has just been assembled from the rest of the league,
yeah,
right?
Just like take a random piece here and a random piece there. But they have some talent now.
Absolutely.
Which is why you can't underestimate them, which is why the Jets, I mean, you know, I can see the Jets and their biggest players, you know, the top six guys being really pumped up for Monday's game against the Leafs. Because you're playing Toronto and, you know, regardless, anytime you play the Leafs, the spotlight is a little bit brighter. We know that it's always Matthews and Line A and the battle between each other. And so for the Jets, I have no worries about their emotion level for Monday. You worry about the letdown, I think, for Wednesday, Thursday.
You know what?
Go ahead. Well, I see you're shaking your head at me already.
The only reason I say that is just because I think with this condensed schedule, you just can't take any team lightly. I really don't. I think the reality is, is Ottawa as effective a team as, do they have the same firepower? No. But to your point, it's an NHL, you know, in the NHL, any team can beat any team.
Yeah.
So you're not going to tell me that the Ottawa Senators can't defeat the Winnipeg Jets on a given night, and order the Toronto Maple Leafs, and or, as we saw last night, or the Calgary Flames. Like, they've got NHL talent on their roster, and they've got a lot of talented young players. They're allowing their young players to get that development time, which is going to serve them extremely well 2-3 years down the road when those players have this under their belt and, you know, a lot of other teams' developing players do not. So I think from a Senators perspective, I think it'll be a good year for that in terms of giving their players that leg up. But I wouldn't take them lightly. I think that, you know, and I don't think the Jets will either. I really don't. I think that you have to, it's different. I think in this new NHL, which again will be like the AHL, mm-hmm. and you have players obviously who've played in the American Hockey League, who play for the Jets. You know, you just can't take a team like that lightly. I just think you, especially with these small series, you know, 2-game series, and I guess this is a 3-game series, right, against the Senators, because
yeah, then they're
obviously coming back and playing the first game here in Winnipeg.
Dave, they're going to be a fun team to watch. That's right. I agree with Drew. I mean, you can't get too excited about one game, but, you know, as Drew mentioned earlier, they brought in some veterans like Derek Stepan and you know, a guy like Eric Branson. I mean, Matt Murray in goal, that instantly makes them better. Whether or not you think Matt Murray can, you know, reclaim, you know, his Stanley Cup form, he gives them a bona fide number one goaltender. He might not be a top 10 NHL goaltender. I'd put him probably in top 15, top 20.
It's a security blanket for any mistakes your team is going to make. Whereas sure. last year for Detroit, for example, they never had that security blanket. Their goaltending mm-hmm. was so awful last year that basically any mistake that a young team would make or a less talented team would make, like the Red Wings were last mm-hmm. year, ended up with a puck in the goal. With the Senators, they're going to make mistakes as well, but having Matt Murray back there, you know, it's just going to give them another layer of confidence that he will, at times, be able to make the saves necessary to bail them out.
Absolutely.
Quickly.
And with Tim Stützle there, I know we're going to get into our predictions later, but, you know, with the way he played for Germany at the World Juniors, and you've got Jake Sanderson that's going to be a member of the Senators for a long time, you give the Senators team guys 2 or 3 years.
Oh, they're
going to
be great.
And they have so many good young prospects, and they are going to be, they're going to be a playoff team for many years to come just because of the amount of high-end draft picks that they have, and Stützle, German spelling, is right at the top of that.
You could see with the Belleville Senators, you could see that they had that young talent starting to infiltrate. So when the Belleville would come to Winnipeg to play the Manitoba Moose, you saw those players starting to rise up. And again, now those players are now infiltrating the Ottawa Senators, the parent club. So again, it's only a matter of time, but it'll be, and that's something folks here in Winnipeg will get a chance to watch, because not only are you going to see the Senators, you're going to see the Belleville Senators.
There you go. The Jets Monday.
The Ottawa Senators. Yeah,
the Jets
Senators.
Monday in Toronto, Wednesday and Thursday in Ottawa against the Senators. Complete coverage here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, more Jets talk. Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back the Hammer, Jeff Hamilton. Jeff, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure, Jeffrey. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets. One game down, 55 to go. It certainly went well for the Jets, particularly the final 40-plus minutes of that game. You know, if you're Patrick Laine now, what does your contract demand start with after that performance and after the love he's feeling from the Winnipeg fans after, you know, taking the team on his back for a large part of Thursday night's victory?
So I think his camp will probably be starting at around the $12 million and try to go, and you know, Jets will try to work that down. Just kidding. I mean, obviously, if he's on pace for, I guess it's 50, you guys are better at math than I am, but that's over 150 points this year in a 56 game season. So at his pace right now, that's probably what he's going to take to the bargaining table. Unfortunately for him, I don't think he's even allowed to talk contract for some time, but certainly a great start for him. You know, obviously a lot of, I don't want to say a ton of pressure. There's pressure on everybody. Obviously, you know, Patrick Laine's tenure here in Winnipeg has been a roller coaster, to say the least, from, you know, everybody's favorite player to, everybody's favorite guy to dump on to, you know, obviously this off season of, you know, trade demand and all that stuff that we know about. You know, there's a bit of pressure on him heading into the season. He handled it, I thought, very professionally. You know, he came out that first day, you know, said he was here, that that's David's quote, now I'm here, aren't I? Well, he definitely showed up. So, you know, the Jets are going to be looking for him to do a lot of that this year. And of course, for him too, obviously, he's in a contract season. For him to shine like he did on that first game is all good for both him as an individual and the Jets as a team.
Hammer, one of the things that stood out to me, I imagine, you know, there's a good chance it stood out to you as well, in addition to Lion A obviously having a huge game and, you know, standing up for his teammate Kyle Connor, but, you know, Paul Stastny watching that game, and, you know, we have to again repeat, we said this quite a bit, you know, over the last hour since the beginning of the show, but it is only one game, but it seems like, you know, Stastny just picks up exactly where he left off, and that's what you expect, you know, from a guy who's 35 years old and has played, you know, as many games in the NHL as he's played. But, you know, that line of Connor, Stastny, and Lion A, even though it's only been, you know, one game, it really seems like, you know, that was what the Jets were lacking last year.
Yeah, certainly is. I mean, if you look at that top six, I mean, there's expectations for every single one of those guys. You know, there's a lot of stars in that group. And, you know, I personally thought that Paul Stastny, along with, I'm sure, a bunch of people, is kind of the X factor. You know, I mean, he's a guy, as you mentioned, you know, there is an expectation that he, you know, he's obviously brings a lot of experience. He's played a lot of years in here. As you mentioned, he's 35 years old. But, you know, as much as you can expect from a guy who has that much experience, I think because he's getting later in his career, I mean, let's face it, he's not becoming a better and better player. I think that part of his game is, I don't want to plateau him, but, you know, he there's also an expectation that he's going to eventually decline. And to see him have the start he had, I mean, you're right, it's just one game. You know, it certainly seemed like a seamless transition, especially because he hadn't played a lot with Kyle Connor in the past, so that's a whole new element to that line. You know, it can be viewed as a success. I think you're going to need him to be healthy this year, I think, first and foremost, and to be that shutdown center, or, you know, a guy who can play up and down the lineup, both special teams. You know, they're going to be asking a lot out of him. So, you know, we talk about Patrick Laine and a you know, contract year for him. Same story for Paul Stastny. It'd be interesting to see what he can do this year. As we know, you know, when he played that half season and the Jets went to the Western Conference Final, I mean, he kind of reignited his career. He's in a similar situation now. So, you know, the one thing that you do get out of a Paul Stastny is the hockey IQ. This guy is not going to be messing up. You know, he knows where he needs to be on the ice. And as long as he can kind of keep up with the speed of Patrick Laine and, more importantly, maybe Kyle Connor, I think we're going to see some good things down here. So certainly, as far as a first test, you know, as we mentioned, obviously great game by Laine, but just that line in general for them to succeed after what was, I don't want to call it a rocky training camp, but they, you know, there was some growing pains trying to build that chemistry early on. To see some of the output in that first game is certainly a good sign.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press.
You know, Jeff, obviously it's only been one game, so you can't project it too significantly. But what was your assessment of the two new players, Trevor Lewis and Derek Forbert?
You know, I thought, you know, Derek Forbert, let's go with that one first. You know, I thought it was a bit of a rocky start. I mean, he's going to get the credit for that second assist on that first goal, but I think it was a defensive breakdown led by him that kind of started that whole mess. But, I thought it was an okay game. I mean, there's going to be some growing pains with him for sure. I mean, that's, he's a guy that, you know, was brought on to bring in size. He obviously has experience. He's had some recent injury problems, but he has shown to play, you know, an ample role in what the team is asking of him, obviously. So, I mean, I think for him, this is, you know, obviously a good opportunity. Again, as you mentioned, it's one game, you know, it is what it is. But I also thought that there was some great performance. I don't know if great's the word, but, you know, I thought Trevor Lewis and Nate Thompson played well too. I mean, this was a gutsy win. You know, it was, if you looked at the first 20 minutes, you thought this was going to be a long season. And then, you know, you saw some vintage Jets with, you know, not getting out of the fight, fighting back. And, you know, whether it was, you need a full team effort in that way. It can't just be, you know, one line carrying you. I know obviously the stars led to the goals and, particularly in overtime and Laine will get, you know, obviously the credit he deserves. But it seemed like a full team effort and maybe there was, you know, you don't know what those guys' roles were perhaps in the intermission or on the bench and whatnot and the experience they bring. But, you know, as far as first impressions, you know, as you mentioned, Dave, I mean, it's hard to kind of say one way or the other, positive or negative, but when you can get the 2 points out of that victory, you know, everyone can kind of pat themselves in the back.
Jeff, we know that the Jets' offensive force is going to come from their top six forwards. It's probably the best top six forward group in the league, or certainly up there in the conversation. You look at the bottom six, though, and as constructed on Thursday night, I just don't see enough offense coming from that group. You know, how would you construct the bottom six forward group to ensure that the Jets just get some offense from them to supplement what you know is going to come from the top six?
Yeah, you know, Drew, I think you're bang on in the sense that, I mean, it's obviously been a storyline here, you know, early in the season about, and not just this, you know, through training camp and now the first game, but even last year and in a couple of years has been, you know, as much as you've seen some great things out of a line that's consisted mostly of Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry on that third line, you know, they do have an important role in some games, particularly home games where you get that last change. I mean, they're there to protect. Or not protect, to defend rather, the, you know, the other team's top line. So it's I kind of come from it in a couple different places. You know, if that's the role of that line, I'm relying on them to shut down the other team's top line, and the goal is to prevent that line from scoring. So if Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp are capable of doing that, and whoever their line mate is, I guess this last game would have been Mason Appleton, if they're capable of doing that, I don't really care if they score goals, because that's the role they have. I don't think you're expecting them to best them in the score sheet as much as you are just to shut them down off the score sheet. So, but you do want to have those nights where you can at least not expect, but rely, you know, you need to get those games, you know, whether it's every one out of, you know, every 10 games or so, where you can't rely on your top two lines to have, you know, perfect nights, or even just one line to carry you, you know, when you want to gut out those wins and you get a fourth line goal, you know, you want that to happen more often than not. And by that, I don't mean more games than not, but just more often than what the expectation has been on this team. And that's certainly been really no expectation. And what's particularly interesting about the fourth line is, as we all know, you know, Paul Maurice has not really used them in the past. That's not going to be the case, I think, this season, because it's going to be out of necessity, just with the truncated season, with how many games you're playing back to back, with, you know, with how intense some of these, you know, I call them kind of mini playoff series will be when you see a team, you know, whether it's two times in a row, or in some cases with the Calgary Flames coming up here four times in a row, things are going to get nasty. So you know, there's going to be injuries, there's going to be, you know, things outside of a regular season that you're just going to have to rely on your depth a little bit heavier. So as much as I still think it is a problem when you look at some of the names, and, you know, I don't even know how I would reconstruct those lines to get more goals out of them, besides maybe breaking up that top six, you know, I think you're kind of just hoping that some of that kind of comes naturally, and although they don't, you know, a lot of those guys don't rack up the score sheet, if they can contribute meaningful on the score sheet every once in a while, that's going to go a long way this season.
Jeff, I imagine it's not going to take very long before we're getting really tired of talking about the schedule, but it's kind of interesting, you know, in the sense that the Leafs are going to have, you know, three games played before they play the Jets on Monday, and, you know, the Jets have, you know, 3 days off here, obviously not practicing today, but you look at the schedule coming up. You mentioned the mini playoff series, and, you know, you're going to have the Senators three times in a row, two on the road, one at home, but those are four games in 6 days, and it's fun now that we get to talk about, you know, goaltending and, you know, who's going to start these games. But, you know, if you had to place a bet on how many games Connor Hellebuck's going to play, is it possible he plays all four games, or is the smart money, you know, on Lauren Brisbois playing one of those games, maybe against the Senators, and then, you know, Hellebuck ends up playing three of those four games in 6 days?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, not one that I, you know, exactly know. I mean, I can certainly give my opinion to it in the sense that I do think there would be an advantage to working with Connor Hellebuck. Obviously, you know, managing that workload, I think he's, you know, we're looking at the start of the season here after many months off, so he's fresh. So I would not be surprised in this instance if he played all the games. Would it be beneficial to give Laurent Brossoit one of those games? Yeah, probably, and I'm sure he will get it. But at this point in the season, I think you can ride Connor Hellebuyck a little bit early because he has that, you know, he still has a lot of gas in the tank. You don't want to overdo it. And obviously you're going to take it day by day, and particularly this season with COVID and it playing probably a big role here. You know, whether or not that leads to, you know, managing goalie starts or not. I think you do want to manage, you know, his headspace. There's a lot of things that go into it, right? You make sure he's on top of his game. If he wants to play, I think he tends to, you know, lean towards, you know, giving Connor the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he knows his body. He's put in some great seasons. He's been Vezina winner, obviously last year, and a finalist a couple of years before that. So like the guy knows what he can handle and what he can't handle. So I think you got to trust him a little bit on that. But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of things at play, whether what point the schedule it is, back to back games, obviously. But I also don't think you want to have Laurent Brossoit because you're expecting to lean on him probably for it, you know, at the most, I imagine, would probably be 16 games. I think you're going to see Connor Hellebuyck in that 40, 45-game range this season, you know, assuming he can be healthy the entire year. But I don't think you want to have him sit on the bench, too, because every game is so important, right? They're all divisional games. There's less games, of course, this year than a regular season. So as much as you want to manage Connor Hellebuyck's load, I think you also have to take into consideration, because you're going to be leaning on your backup goalie a little bit more than a regular season, to get him in the mix sooner than later. So I do agree with you, as in the sense that I think an Ottawa game, just given where they're at or where they're expected to be in the standings this year, might be a little bit of an easier game than to throw them, say, against Montreal Canadiens, who look really good, or Toronto Maple Leafs, who have a lot of firepower up front.
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. You can read all his work in the local broadsheet. Jeff, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Jeff. When we come back, we'll do some Winnipeg Jets over-unders for the 2021 season. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Going to do some Winnipeg Jets over-unders for the 2021 season coming up here in a moment. First, this segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Bernstein's is keeping you safe in the midst of this current code red status. If you want curbside to pick up, they have that for you. If you want delivery, they have that for you. The restaurant's open for takeout. Of course, the deli counter is always open. Bernstein's Deli, there for you in whatever manner you need them to be. Check them out online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
It's not code red at Bernstein's, Drew. It's code IC sandwich.
Yeah, very. It just rolls off the tongue there, Azzy. Maybe you should stick to not writing greeting cards in your spare time. Doesn't matter. Let's get into some over-unders for the 2021 season for the Winnipeg Jets. In this 56-game regular season, the Winnipeg Jets' leading goal scorer will have over or under 35.5 goals. Dave?
Well, as you can start.
You guys were pointing at each other. One of you needs to answer over or under.
Dave, are you playing this music off your phone?
No, this is being played by our producer, hey, Sean Asor, back at the studio. 35.5 goals over under for this 2021 season for the Jets' leading goal scorer.
Over.
Over is what you're going to say. Any explanation there, or just going to say you straight over?
No, I feel like I think that either Patrick Laine or Kyle Connor are going to just continue to rip it up. So okay. But that would be my expectation.
Is he 35.5 over or under?
So 30, if my math is correct, just use the calculator app on my phone, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
That equates to a 52-goal season.
In a normal 82-game season?
Yeah, extrapolated.
Right, extrapolated it out?
Yeah, I'm going to say over.
So even though it's a huge number of goals in a regular 82-game season, you're going to say over.
And, you know,
because goal scoring is up so far
exactly,
this season.
Exactly, and Laine's already got two. I think Laine's going to score 40.
There you go. Okay, they're both going over on that one.
It's going to be tough to do, but I think...
Yeah, I'm not making it easy, but I think it'll happen.
Last year, before the pause, the Jets had two players averaging over a point per game. This year, the Jets will have over or under 2.5 players averaging 1 point per game.
Over.
over. So who are your three players or more than in that instance?
Well, I've got Scheifele, Laine, and Connor for sure, and I think Ehlers could as well.
Okay, so you're even going, you're saying there's going to be four guys at least on the Jets.
I think they have potential for sure.
Ezzy?
Yeah, I like that one. Got a lot of questions here, Drew, in the show plan. I'm going to say over. For sure, I would say three. Same guys as Dave. I think there's a good chance that you're going to see Scheifele, Connor, Laine, and Ehlers. So I'll go over four guys. And I don't think Wheeler is going to be far off either.
Last year, Kyle Connor scored 10 more goals than Patrick Laine in three more games played. This year, the goals scored differential between Laine and Connor will be over or under 4.5 goals.
Under. I think they're going to be. I think it's going to be very close. I think they'll probably fall within that, 2 to 4 goal range.
I like this music.
This is the.
I don't know why you're looking at my ceiling right now. It's not coming from the ceiling.
It's not coming from above. This isn't God talking to you. This is just the mountain climber music
thinking,
from The Price is Right.
These are really good over-under questions here. Oh, I'm going to say over. I don't think it's going to be much over, but as I said, I think Laine is going to pop in 40 Gs, and I think Connor is going to be at 35.
Yeah, that would put it over. There you go. Fair enough. Last year, the Winnipeg Jets power play ranked 15th in the NHL with a success rate of 20.5%. 2 years ago, the Jets power play ranked 4th in the NHL with a success rate of 24.8%.
Could have just rounded that off.
This season, the Jets power play will have a success rate of over or under 22.5%.
I'm going to qualify my answer.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's under.
But?
Unless they put Nikolai Ehlers on the top power play unit.
Okay, so you think Ehlers on there is going to drive it up even higher?
Absolutely.
Okay, Ezzy? Yeah. Over or under 22.5% for the Jets power play success rate?
I'm going to say over.
You're going to say over as well?
Yeah, I think it's tough, though, because, as you mentioned, you're talking about a difference of 4% from year to year, and obviously you've put it a couple of percentage points above last year.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm going to say over. I think it'll be around 23 to 23.5%.
That's usually why I'm usually pretty good at finding that number.
Hey.
If Jack Ross... This isn't my first rodeo here, boys. I've done this a couple times. If Jack Roslovic does not sign with the Jets by February 11th, he is ineligible to play in the NHL this season. The Jets will have played 12 games by then, leaving 44 games remaining in the regular season. Roslovic will play over or under 30.5 games for the Jets this season.
I'm going to go with the over because I think Jack Roslovic is going to be sitting at home in Columbus right now realizing he's in an untenable situation and he's not, especially if the Jets start to win. If the Jets start to win, he's going to be like, well, I'm not going to be playing because they're in a position of strength at this point. So I would think that he and his representation are going to come to their senses and say, you know what? We're never getting this, even if it's not as much money as you want, you're not getting this money back. So I think he's going to play with it.
So you think he comes back and stays for the majority of the season? Because obviously that number, that 30.5 number, could factor in a trade or something.
Yeah, of course.
Is he over or under?
I'm going to say under. I agree with Dave. I think that Roslovic is going to sign before February 11th, but I do think he gets traded before then.
Oh, there you go.
Before he plays 30.5 games.
Before he plays 31
games.
Yes, exactly.
Or whatever, 30.
Last one, and we'll revisit this later on in the show. Last year, Blake Wheeler had the fourth most points per game for the Jets with 0.92 points per game played. This year, Wheeler will finish over or under 47.5 points, which is 0.85 points per game played. So assuming Wheeler plays 56 games, if he finishes with over or under 47.5 points, which is 0.85 points per game.
Well, I mean, again, I hate to qualify my answers because I think, a lot of things can be a factor in. If he comes off that first power play unit, there's going to be a lot of points potentially lost in that instance. But I would put him just slightly under. I think he's probably going to finish in that 43 to 45 point range.
Is he over or under? Last one before we go to break.
Yeah, I'm going to say, it's another good one. I'm going to say over slightly. 3 years ago, he had his 91-point season, right, which tied his career high the previous year. So I think he'll be, you know, Dave says between 40 and 45. I think he'll probably be between 45 and 50. So I'll say over.
So you say he's going to go over. Okay, we'll revisit the over, under. We'll do more of them later on in the show. But when we come back, we're going to be joined by Micah Blake McCurdy. He's known as Ineffective Math on Twitter.
Hockey Viz.
Hockey Viz. He does a lot of hockey analysis using these quote-unquote analytics and the advanced stats. And he ranks the Jets very highly for this coming season. We'll talk to Micah about his reasoning and why he has the Jets as the second-best team in the North Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.